Welcome in. It is Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until 9:15. Then we'll turn it over to Nationals baseball. Charlie and Dave calling some West Coast baseball tonight. Late night Nats as the Nats continue their West Coast road trip. Six-gamer, three games in Arizona. Won the first two, dropped yesterday's game. Now they take on one of the worst teams in the National League, one of the worst teams in the league, in the San Francisco Giants for three, starting tonight in Oracle Park. So we'll get into some Nationals talk coming up at 7 o'clock. Today is a monumental debut day. 16 years ago today, Steven Strasburg debuted, so we'll talk about that coming up at 7 o'clock. And also want to talk about the Nats getting ready for the Giants a little bit later on the show. Joe Spadoni of 95.7 The Game Morning Roast, their morning show out there in San Francisco. He's going to join us coming up at 8:30. Want to get his thoughts on this Aiyuk saga. Also, we can talk a little Nats and Giants as the Nats are out in San Francisco. And want to get into some of the Aiyuk discussion as well at some point during the show. NBA Finals going to get underway tonight. So a packed evening of sports. And we'll have you covered right here on 106.7 The Fan. Want to start, though, with a couple of things that we can't spend as much time on tonight, but in the short time we do to start the show here, I want to talk about a couple of things that are pressing to me. First, we've got to talk about this Brendan Sorsby thing. This is absolutely insane that he's just going to be allowed to play college football. He's just going to be allowed to step back out on college football field. And it's kind of a joke that this is allowed. And I do not get this one bit. And I understand that you don't want to ruin a guy's life for a bad mistake or those sorts of things, but there are certain things that are cardinal sins in various fields. In sports, when you are an athlete, I get that college athletes aren't technically professional athletes, but in a sense they are, the fact that they're getting paid now. So when you're an athlete, the cardinal sin is betting on your sport, and specifically betting on games involving your team, whether for or against them. And so for him to be able to just bet on his team and serve a two-game suspension and that's it, that's a joke. It's a complete joke. It ruins the integrity of the game. You can just go do a bunch of different things and no worries, no consequences. And college sports has ended up in a really, really tough spot now where you've got former pro athletes coming back and playing college sports. We saw that this year with Alabama basketball, which is a complete joke. Complete joke. Once you've turned pro, you lose your eligibility. Sorry. But that is not the case anymore in college sports. You've got a guy now who committed the cardinal sin of betting on your own sports, betting on your own games. I get that he's betting for them, but that's still not all right. And he's just going to miss two games and it's all right. No big deal. Hop right back in. What a terrible thing today for college sports to see Brendan Sorsby essentially get off with a little slap on the wrist and no big deal and right back at it. And it just sucks because college sports, what we always loved them for, even though it was kind of an illusion, what we always enjoyed was the amateurism aspect of it and those various parts of it. That's gone. Completely gone. And now you're running into a spot where I don't even know how you defend some of this stuff anymore. It's absolutely a complete joke. Dan Wetzel wrote a column, I believe this is for ESPN, and I thought this was interesting. There's a quote from a Big 12 coach. So I don't know who it is, but a Big 12 coach. And this is the quote in his article today from Dan Wetzel. If this is the precedent, then I owe it to my players to bring in people from Las Vegas to teach us how to gamble. Then collectively, we need to decide which games we'll play hard in to cover the spread, and which ones we won't. What a joke. He went on to say, I'm supposed to do what's best for my players, and in that case, to be able to make a lot of money betting on our games. That's the precedent for me. Just a complete joke. And I hate the idea of being able to, because we saw this with the Alabama situation as well with Charles Bediako, where you're questioning whether the guy should be allowed to or not, and hey, let's just go get a judge that is biased, of course. Where did this judge come from? Lubbock, Texas. Anyone want to take a guess where Texas Tech is? Lubbock, Texas. Go back and look at the Bediako situation. Where did that judge come from? Alabama. Where's Bediako trying to play? Alabama. Shocker. Like, that's just terrible. That is not good for college sports in the slightest. And I love college sports. And I work Virginia Tech basketball and football games. Love it. Grew up a diehard Hokie fan. And I know so many fans that are fans of different colleges. And I've got friends when I went to college out in the Midwest that's their number one. That wasn't necessarily the case for me growing up. You care more about the professional teams coming out of D.C. But for a lot of people, if you live in Columbus, you're a diehard Buckeye fan. If you grew up in Ann Arbor area, you're a diehard Michigan fan. You live in Bloomington area, you're a diehard Indiana University fan, right? Like all those sorts of things. And some cases, they care more about that than they do about the professional sports teams. And now you look at where this college sports scene is at now, and it's just a complete joke. No one knows what the rules are. It's the wild, wild west. And I think the NCAA did a terrible job because they spent so much time arguing about the NIL and trying to prevent it and not allow it to happen. And it felt inevitable. It really did. It felt like eventually players were going to get paid. But they never put in any infrastructure to be ready for NIL when it came through. And I get that this isn't NIL related. This is gambling on your own sport. But this is a major problem. You don't just get away with this and it's nothing. And you throw in the NIL, you throw in the transfer portal, you throw in now that guys are gambling on their own sport, on their own games, and get minimal suspensions. And you start to wonder, where the heck is the future of college sports? What is going on here? I mean, Pete Rose is vilified, and rightfully so, for what he did with baseball. How is Brendan Sorsby any different here? And it doesn't matter. We're going to watch him play in the third game for Texas Tech next year. He's potentially a first-round pick in the NFL draft, and it's just going to get cast by the wayside? Terrible. Absolutely terrible news today for college sports. All right, we don't have a ton of time to spend on that. We could spend more time on that, I'm sure, but we could also get into one other major event that's getting underway later this week. How about a little soccer? World Cup's going to get underway later this week. We'll get into that next. You're listening to Overtime on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer taking you up until Nats baseball tonight. 9:15 pregame with Charlie and Dave is there on the West Coast still. San Francisco Giants. The Nats and the Giants tonight. Beginning of a three-game series. We'll have that for you right here on The Fan. First pitch, 9:45. Pregame, 9:15. We'll get into some Nationals baseball coming up at 7 o'clock. But I'm curious how people are starting to feel about the World Cup. It felt like leading up to it the last couple of weeks, there have been so many other things going on. Even today, the official start of World Cup week, you know, there's other stuff going on. We just talked about Sorsby here, obviously. You've got the Aiyuk saga going down. We're going to talk about Steven Strasburg making his debut 16 years ago today. But I think as it gets closer and closer and closer, and you can't get a whole lot closer than being in the finally being in the week of the World Cup, you know, it's starting to get some of that buzz. It'll get underway on Thursday, so you'll have the first two matches on Thursday. 3 o'clock, Mexico, South Africa, in Mexico City. How great is that atmosphere going to be, by the way? That'll be a lot of fun to watch. I can't wait for that one. And then in the evening, 10 o'clock, you'll have South Korea and Czechia and Guadalajara. So that should be a good one. And then Friday, you get the other host nations involved. The United States will be in action. U.S. men's national team playing at SoFi. They're late in the evening taking on Paraguay. That'll be at 9 o'clock. Canada taking on Bosnia-Herzegovina in Toronto at 3 o'clock. So this is going to be really cool because Thursday and Friday, you get the host nations kicking off the World Cup. You get Mexico and Mexico City. You get Canada and Toronto. And you get the United States in L.A. And that's going to be a lot of fun. Now, personally, it's a little frustrating to me that we couldn't get this new stadium up and running in time because I can almost guarantee you that the United States would have opened their World Cup playing here in Washington, D.C. We're a little late on this, obviously. So, unfortunately, no new stadium, no games in the DMV. But, man, as it gets closer and closer, I'm getting a little bit of that fever. I went out there this morning. I was kicking the ball around, just thinking about when I played a little bit growing up. and getting a little bit of that World Cup fever. And tickets are ridiculously expensive. That's another talking point. We're talking about that for Game 3 of the Finals tonight. We're also talking about that for the World Cup. The closest one is Philadelphia, and there's not, I don't think there's any big-time matches. There's a round of 16 game. If you want to go for that one, it's a couple of grand. But I'm just excited to see how the country embraces the World Cup as it goes on. Another part that's funny, too, about watching this is, I don't know how much you guys are online that are listening, but seeing some of the Europeans that are just now getting into town to watch World Cup soccer in the United States and the way that they're talking about the stadiums is just hilarious to me. And they're going through the United States and experience what we kind of take for granted because we're Americans and this is where we live. But seeing them kind of go through the different things, I saw this German account was driving around and they were excited because they were in Atlanta and they went to a Waffle House at 1 a.m. I thought that was hilarious to see them going through like, wow, this is what America's like. And sure enough, that is exactly what America's like, being able to go to the Waffle House in the South. And then seeing the bickering back and forth, the complaining back and forth about the English who are complaining that our stadiums have no culture, and yet they're playing in tiny stadiums in the Premier League, and I'm not even trashing them. They can play in theirs, and they have maybe a little more history, and that stuff is cool. You know what else is cool? You ever looked at SoFi Stadium? I don't care that there's no history there. You ever looked at that stadium? How cool is that place? You ever looked at Jerry World's? I get it. It's right across the street from a Walmart or whatever. Who cares? That place is incredible. Just look up at the screen. So I'm excited to see just the way that people talk about this World Cup, and I'm excited to see how it all goes down, but I'm excited to see what this U.S. men's national team can do. I'm already kind of primed for some heartbreak and frustration and disappointment. That seems to be what they do a good job of. But if you just look at their group, they better make it out. They better make it out of their group. You look at who they've got. They've got Paraguay on this Friday, and they've got a week off in between games. Then they're back in action on the following Friday against Australia. That's a 3 o'clock game, and that's going to be in Seattle. And by the way, that should be a heck of a crowd. Seattle always gets a good environment for soccer games, so that one should be a fun one. And then their final game will be the next Thursday at 10 o'clock against Turkey, and that game's back at SoFi. So all their games being played out on the West Coast. But I'm excited to see what the U.S. men's national team can do. You got to hope on your home soil, this is your best effort, and you can give it a run and make some memories. I mean, this is a real chance for them to grow the game of soccer in the United States. So I'm catching a little bit of that World Cup fever. I can't wait for the end of the week. You get this underway on Thursday. United States taking part on Friday. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, a major debut, something that we all remember. 16 years ago today, Steven Strasburg towed the rubber at Nationals Park for the first time. Let's talk about that debut next here on The Fan. Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until Nats baseball. Pre-game getting underway at 9:15. Busy sports night. NBA Finals going to tip off at 8:30. 8:30, we'll be joined by Joe Spadoni of 95.7 The Game, the Morning Roast Show. He'll join us to talk about the Brandon Ayuk saga. We'll get into that in just a little bit as well. But let's start on the diamond. How about June 8th, 2010, 16 years ago today? It doesn't seem like it's been that long. At the same point, it feels like it's been a while. 16 years ago today, Steven Strasburg stepped on the hill at Nationals Park for the first time and engineered one of the greatest major league debuts of all time. 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 runs, no walks, 14 strikeouts. Here was the sound of Nationals Park 16 years ago today.
2 outs, top of the 7th. No balls, 2 strikes. The line, the kick, and the pitch.
Swing and a miss! 14 strikeouts! 7 in a row! Unbelievable!
That may be all for the night, and they are saluting their new hero here in D.C.
There's a new mayor in town, Dave. He won the election in one night.
14 strikeouts. Wow.
As advertised, better than that. They want a curtain call.
Wow. I would love to hear Nationals Park like that again. The atmosphere, the energy. 16 years ago today, 14 strikeouts for Steven Strasburg. And how about that? How about Steven Strasburg and what he did for this organization? And we're going to dive into what the Nationals need to do in the series and talk about some of their future going forward in a little bit. But, I mean, taking a look back at that and remembering that time frame, the Nationals had just come back into town in 2005. And they're finally open up Nationals Park now for just a couple of seasons. And then you get Steven Strasburg making his debut and has essentially turned prospects into a major business. Not that they didn't care about prospects before, but now major league debuts are a massive thing. And you're always talking about them. But you want to know where it all started, at least it felt like, and really put that on the map? Steven Strasburg, 14 Ks in his major league debut. And it's something we all remember, watching that game against the Pirates and seeing him immediately leave that mark. And seeing him, Harper, debuting not that long after in a couple of seasons, and seeing the team start to really take off to what they did in the 2010s, where they're making the playoffs every other year, and they ultimately culminated with a World Series championship in 2019. But to see that kind of kicking off what was going to be an incredible run for the Nationals with June 8th, 2010, kind of put the Nats on the map, kind of made them a household name and made their brand something that you knew. And Steven Strasburg was a major part of that. He was a major part of turning them into a MLB organization that people respected and people cared about. And locally, seeing that sort of energy at a ballpark in D.C., something that hadn't been around that long. I didn't get to experience much of my childhood without Nationals baseball. So I've grown up a Nats fan. I've grown up living and dying with every pitch of this team. But for people that were in the area that didn't have local team here in D.C. for the longest time, you know, it was Baltimore. It was cheering for them. But then you finally got your team back where you could cheer for D.C., your city again. And to be able to have that back, so incredible. And then to kick off that whole renaissance of baseball in the nation's capital with Steven Strasburg striking out 14 was so, so cool. And that's a moment I wish I could have been at. I was there for his third career start, which came 10 days later against the Chicago White Sox, where he set the record for most strikeouts for his first three starts in Major League Baseball. And just remembering what he was as a prospect and as someone who really, really mattered for this organization. Going back and looking at what he did in that game on June 18th. How about 7 innings, 4 hits, 1 run, 10 strikeouts. And I remember that game because the Nationals lost in extras 2-1 going to 11 innings. I think Adam Dunn or Ryan Zimmerman, I can't remember, had an extra base hit off the wall to score a run, but it wasn't enough. Gavin Floyd pitched in that one. It was supposed to be Mark Burley. This was a long time ago when it was a little more difficult to check who the probable starters were going to be a little bit further out. I was a kid at the time, and I remember checking and seeing that Mark Burley might be on the hill. I mean, just remembering what it was like to have Strasmania, where everybody cared about the Nationals all of a sudden. Me and a buddy, my mom had bought us tickets. It was just a end of the school year. Here's a gift for doing well in school this year. We're sitting front row in left field. We bought the tickets, and we didn't know that it was going to be Steven Strasburg's third career start. We'd obviously followed along with his first two starts and were enamored with the potential of what he could be. And then to know that we were going to be in attendance, we stopped at a Modell's. Remember when that was a thing? We stopped at a Modell's, bought Steven Strasburg t-shirts that we wore for years and sat in the front row in left field and watched Steven Strasburg and the Nats. That was so, so cool. And I want to talk more about Stras in just a second, about what I like so much about him as a pitcher, because you saw some of the evolution of him turning into what he did in 2019. But one thing that is frustrating about this whole situation with Steven Strasburg and with the Nationals, whichever side is wrong, I don't really know. I don't know all the details on what's going on behind the scenes and all that stuff. But I really wish that Strauss would make his return to Nationals Park and that all of that stuff would be moved on from whatever happened at the end of his career there so that you could retire his number. You know, the beautiful part about having this franchise that has come back only since 2005, and there's going to be two all-time greats in this franchise's history that only played here. And unfortunately for the Nationals, one of the hallmarks of this franchise has now become their all-time greats go play elsewhere. Max Scherzer, Juan Soto, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, you know, they're legends that people live and die by for their amount of time here in D.C. They go and play elsewhere. Juan Soto is going to be remembered as a Met. Bryce Harper is going to be remembered as a Philly, right? And that sucks. It really does. At least for Juan Soto, he won a World Series here, and he was a pivotal part of that. So he's going to be remembered for, you know, his big part of that. Even Rendon, he's going to be remembered as a National, but even he finishes somewhere else. He donned another jersey. Not that often, but he played somewhere else. For this franchise to have, I would argue, you could maybe say Harp deserves him to be in this discussion, but of the three most important Nationals of all time, at least in their history, since they've come back to D.C., number one is Ryan Zimmerman. There's no question about that, Mr. National, and what he meant for this organization and the way that he still carries the banner forward as an ambassador for this team. But number two, because of that debut 16 years ago, you can make the argument Steven Strasburg is right there. And he was the World Series MVP to culminate it all. Those two guys will never play for anybody else. And for a franchise that has just over 20 years of history now, because we're not talking about the Expos, we're not talking about the Washington Senators of old, we're talking about this team, the Washington Nationals, to have two guys as iconic as those guys. And Zim, maybe not as much so on the national stage, but around here, ask anybody, and they think of the number 11, they think Ryan Zimmerman. So many people growing up, so many people my age, that was their guy, Ryan Zimmerman. The way that a lot of people that were growing up in the area when they didn't have the Nationals talk about Cal Ripken, so many people in this area that grew up with the Nationals as a part of their childhood talk about Ryan Zimmerman that way. So think about how influential he is. He never played anywhere else. He was their first draft pick. Number 11's retired. No one else is ever going to wear it. That is Ryan Zimmerman. That's incredible. And no one else is going to wear 37 ever again. No one else is going to touch Steven Strasburg's number. That is Steven Strasburg, the guy that really put this team on the map with his debut 16 years ago. So whatever the ill will, the frustration, the bad blood there, I wish there was a way that that could get moved on from, because I think Nationals fans would love to be able to give Strasburg a send-off. And if Strauss, he's not one that likes the limelight, he's not one that wants to be in front of cameras and all that stuff, but this ain't for Strauss. This ain't for Steven Strasburg. This is for everybody else. This is for the fans like you and me that just want to say thank you one final time. And if he never shows his face at Nationals Park again, you know, he doesn't show up for, you know, the 10-year anniversary of the 2019 team in 3 years, that's okay. If we never see him again and he just wants to do his thing and, you know, live in the shadows the rest of his life, that's fine. Thank you for all that you've done, but please give us a way that we can say thank you one more time. And so that on the facade at Nationals Park next to number 11 retired Ryan Zimmerman, we can put number 37 Steven Strasburg retired as well. Because I think that's one of the cool parts about being a Nationals fan is in a team that has now been known as their stars leave and, oh, Juan Soto and Harper, we at least will always have Ryan Zimmerman and Steven Strasburg never wore anything but the curly W. That's it. Those are our guys, and we can always claim them. And for them to win a World Series after all that they've been through, Zim through all of it starting in 2005, Strauss starting 16 years ago today, culminating with a World Series championship and a World Series MVP, I think it's so, so cool. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to talk about it. Steven Strasburg made his debut 16 years ago today. I want to talk a little more about Strauss. I love the evolution we saw from him. I love how he turned himself into a pitcher as time went on. He was a bit of just a thrower, even though he was an effective thrower. He was just a thrower to start out. But to see him turn into a pitcher as time went on, I want to talk about that next. Again, if you want to hop in, 800-636-1067. An incredible debut. Steven Strasburg struck out 14 Pirates. on this day 16 years ago. We're talking about it here on The Fan. Overtime on The Fan, Toby Altizer with you until 9:15, taking you up until Nationals baseball. We're talking about the Nats because on 16 years ago today, on this day 16 years ago, Steven Strasburg made his major league debut, striking out 14 Pirates and really putting the Nationals on the map for an incredible run that culminated with a World Series to end the 2010s. In 2019, World Series MVP Steven Strasburg at the end of it. And I love thinking about Stras. During his time here, I always have a thing for left-handed Nationals pitching, so he was never my favorite pitcher on the team. I always loved Gio. I always loved watching Patrick Corbin when he first got here, his first season. I really enjoyed in 2019. Max Scherzer, that whole group was always a blast to watch, so he was never at the top of my list in terms of favorite pitchers for this team. But what he did for this team and just the presence that he was when he was able to stay healthy and on the hill was massive for what this team was able to accomplish. And you think back to that 2019 season when he was able to stay healthy and be that difference maker that we knew he could be when he was healthy and on the hill. And you look back at what he did in 2019, started 33 games, pitched 209 innings, and really that was it for him, by the way. After that, he pitched 5 innings in 2020, 21 and 2/3 in 21, and 4 and 2/3 in 22, and that's the last we saw of him. So he pitched essentially 30 innings after that 2019 season. 209 innings in 2019, 18-6 record, pitched to a ERA of 3.32, struck out 251 over 209 innings, and was so impressive and a workhorse for that team. And that 19 team was so much fun to watch because they got off to such a slow start. And I'd have to go back and look. I bet you I can find the start. I remember I wasn't living in the area at the time. So in 2019, I didn't get to enjoy any of the playoff games or anything like that. And I saw Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer pitch two of the three games in Milwaukee. And Stras had been dealing in this game. I found the start. It was May the 7th of 2019. This is before the big turnaround for the Nats. And I remember the frustration that I was feeling because Stras had gone through six innings and was dominant. He punched out 11 in this outing. He gave up 4 earned runs, though, because he had to come back out for the seventh inning because there was no one they could trust out of the bullpen. And they gave the lead away and lost the game 6-0, because nothing was going right for that team to start the year. But to see the evolution of that team and Davey being able to galvanize that group saying, hey, we've got enough in here. Let's just stay positive. Let's keep working towards it. The influence that Gerardo Parra brought over when he joined the team in the middle of the season. And then when they got rolling, to see Juan Soto, to see Anthony Rendon, to see all those guys was so much fun. And then that postseason run, I mean, you go back and watch those games, and you know the results of how it ends. Washington wins it all, and yet you go back and watch those games, and you're through 4 or 5 innings, and you're like, oh my gosh, they're going to lose. And that's even knowing at the end they come back and win every single time. So it's incredible to go back and watch that. But speaking on Steven Strasburg, I loved watching him evolve. When he came into the league, you knew what he was going to do. He was going to throw you fastballs and curveballs and some changeups, and he was going to be able to mow you down because in 2010, he was averaging 98 on his four-seam fastball. He was blowing it by you. And then as time went on, he started to lose some of that velocity and had to turn himself into more of a pitcher. And he was the old-school, old country hardball, I'm going to throw number one past you a bunch to start his career. And he's going to rip off the Uncle Charlie every now and then. But for the most part, we're going to throw heaters by you. To see how he evolved to the point that in 2019, he's always pitching out of the stretch. He can throw you any pitch in any count. Matter of fact, in 2019, he threw more curveballs than he did four-seamers. His four-seam velocity was averaging 93.9, down 4 miles an hour from what he had averaged before. His changeup was disgusting. His curveball was so good. And he could throw anything in any count. To see him go from the guy that was just pumping 98 and 100 past people to, all right, it's a 2-0 count. I'm going to throw you a changeup here. You're expecting a cookie here, 3-1. Here's a curveball for you. Oh, and by the way, here's a fastball. I can run it up to 95 and still get you out. I loved watching him. And especially when he got to the postseason, he's someone that I don't think he gets enough credit for what he did in the postseason throughout his career. He was spectacular. And I don't know that people are going to talk about him because maybe he didn't pitch as many games in the postseason as others. He only started nine games or started 8 games. So he didn't have a long career in the postseason. Only pitched in 3 years, 6 different series. You know, most of those coming in 2019. But how about this? Over 55 and a third innings in his postseason career, he pitched to a 1.46 ERA, had 8 walks to 71 strikeouts. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. That's one of the best postseason pitchers of all time. Now, we didn't get to watch him, you know, pitch as much as we would have liked to in the postseason. We remember what happened in 2012. We remember, you know, some of those frustrating playoff losses as well, but it never was really on Steven Strasburg. He was always someone that you could rely on when you got into October. So just remembering what Stras did for this team, it's fun to watch this team now and see the way that they're scoring runs and the way that they're kind of turning on to this next era where, you know, there aren't a whole lot of holdovers from that team in 2019 anymore. There's not a whole lot to tie you back to that other than occasionally seeing Sean Doolittle in the dugout. There's not a lot to tie you back to them. It's a new era of Nationals baseball, and you've got some stars at the front. C.J. Abrams, James Wood. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a little bit, but real quick before we move on to talking about Brandon Ayuk, there was a stat that I saw over the weekend about James Wood that I think puts into perspective how good of a player he is. So Matthew Mocha of the New York Times put out this stat. James Wood is 23 years old and has played 299 career games. I believe this was put out 3 days ago. So this was during the middle of that or beginning of that Diamondback series. So some of this has maybe changed just slightly. But he has recorded 126 extra base hits and 175 walks. In Major League Baseball history, only 3 players have recorded 125-plus extra base hits and 175-plus walks in 299 or fewer games before turning 24. Here's the list for you. Ted Williams, Juan Soto, James Wood. Anytime you're on a list with those guys, you're in pretty good company. He's a special player. And I think we talk about some of the other guys on this baseball team a lot. For the Nationals, whether it's C.J. Abrams and trade talks or guys that are standing out and doing stuff that maybe we weren't expecting, don't forget about how special a player James Wood is. That's a guy that if you haven't had a chance to get out to the ballpark this year, show up to the ballpark to watch this guy hit. And on top of the fact that he's a great player, a great dude, some of the stuff that he can do on the baseball field, there's not a lot of guys in Major League Baseball that can do it. His opposite field power, it's got to be up there in the top 2 or 3 in the sport. There's not a lot of guys that can hit the ball with authority like he can the other way. And that's what makes him so special to watch and so much fun. And it's been a blast. And he's going to be starting the All-Star game, hopefully, in Philadelphia for the National League. His second All-Star game appearance. Him, C.J. Abrams, likely to be representing the Nats in Philadelphia for the All-Star game coming up in about a month. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, let's get into the Brandon Ayuk situation. You can kind of take it where you'd want if you want to hop on the phone lines, 800-636-1067, but I do want to get into this. We're all focusing on Ayuk and whether he's being an idiot or how dumb is he acting and some of those things, and I agree with the majority of what's being said about Brandon Ayuk. It is incredibly foolish to do a lot of what he's done. But let's look on the flip side just a little bit, just to consider. Do the Niners deserve some of the blame here? And if they do, how much? And also, how interested are you on Washington bringing in Brandon Ayuk? 800-636-1067. Phone lines are open. Toby Altizer in overtime with you here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on the Fan. Toby Altizer with you until just after 9 o'clock, taking you up until Nationals baseball. We'll get back into a little Nats talk to wrap up the show. Also coming up at 8:30, Joe Spadoni of the Morning Roast of 95.7 The Game out in San Francisco. He's going to join us. Want to get his thoughts on Nats and Giants, as well as diving deeper into this Aiyuk situation, looking at it from the other side. It's funny, this Aiyuk situation is one that it kind of feels like we're the only two cities that care about it at this point. Like, it gets talked about a little bit nationally, but it feels like D.C. and San Francisco are the only ones that have to constantly talk about this. So I'm curious on the flip side, little insight into what went wrong there fully, and I'll ask him this same question I want to ask you guys now. How much blame do you think the Niners deserve in this Brandon Aiyuk situation? 800-636-1067. Because we've talked plenty about the Brandon Aiyuk stuff, from the frustration with the way that he's acting, you know, the videos over the weekend, the picture in a Commander's hat. We'll see what happens. I still am of the belief that he is going to play for the Burgundy and Gold. We'll see when that is. But I do believe that he is going to play here. It's a matter of when, not if. And so if that's the case, we'll still have to figure out if he's going to be the headache that we kind of assume that he's going to be, or maybe he's going to be a model citizen when he comes over here because he actually wants to be here. Who knows? And so I can't speak to that side of things, because I'd be interested as well. I don't feel like Aiyuk was an issue before all the contract stuff and then what happened over the last year and a half or so. I didn't feel like he was a major issue off the field. It feels like this kind of popped up. And so I think that's the interesting part about this. If this were another organization, I'd be curious to see if this sort of thing would go on. The reason I say that is there are holdouts, contract disputes, all these sorts of things happen around the NFL. It's not unique to San Francisco. I get that. But if you had to choose which organization you feel like is the most or least player-friendly, I guess you would say, most into winning negotiations and this is a business over we're going to, you know, treat our players with the utmost respect and maybe give them a bigger contract than we would like to give them, but we want to make sure that we treat this guy correctly or whatever it is, we'll throw in a few bucks or whatever it is. A team that's not going to always play hardball with their superstars, it wouldn't be San Francisco. It wouldn't. You can go back over the last couple of years and look at a number of their contracts and see the holdouts and the talk of sitting out of training camp and all those things. Debo, Kittle, Aiyuk, obviously, Trent Williams. Go up and down the list. And there have been plenty of guys that have been of that ilk of a long, contentious contract negotiation that generally ends with them getting it done, but it would go to the last possible second. They would squeeze every last penny, and then they'd finally get to a point where they both sides would agree to whatever the deal would be, right? And we saw a little bit of that tactic with Terry McLaurin here. I'm not a fan of that tactic. If this is Madden, and you're playing a game where it's only about the money and there's no personalities involved and it's not a people business and it's just a bunch of computer-generated players running around for you, let's play hardball, baby. Let's save every cent possible, because at the end of the day, I can restart my franchise mode. And I really don't care if Terry McLaurin has low morale on Madden for my football team as GM Adam Peters of my Commanders franchise on Madden 26. That's not the way the NFL works, though. That's not the way real football works. There are relationships. There are personalities involved. There is more to it than just, hey, let's save a buck here, let's save a buck there, to make sure that we get everything best for the organization, and you're just a player, so what do you matter to me? I can go find another one. Sometimes when you act like that, you can frustrate a player to a point that they start lashing out and acting in a way that is not a good look for them. But at the same point, it's not always unwarranted. And there are things that Ayuk is doing that I am not for at all. Obviously, speeding, some of the extra stuff. And I personally would not sign him. I personally am out on that whole idea. But I think it is interesting to look at it from the other side. Because I don't want him. But let's make the argument for if you did. Because I think it is something that if you're going to be able to get this guy on a cheap contract, check, you will, for a short amount of time with no large guarantees, check, and a contract that you could probably get out of, also check. And I was listening to Rooster on with G&D earlier today, and I thought he brought up a good point about that. You know, this isn't something that you can bring him in and move on from him if he's a malcontent and there's no repercussions because you're bringing in Jaden's friend. And so are you just moving on from him just because, and then you're going to frustrate Jaden? Those sorts of things. I think there's a little bit more to it than, hey, there's no strings attached and you can cut him if necessary. But that still is a major selling point of getting guys that are flyers like this. But I also don't think that the Niners are blameless in all of this. I really don't. I think that there is something to be said for the way that they treat their players and the frustration it brings. And in some cases, guys that can't handle it as well end up in a spot where they act out foolishly. And I think some of that is Brandon Ayuk right now. Doesn't mean that I want him, because what happens if Washington does the same thing? Like I talked about, that same thing happened to Terry McLaurin. Look at how Terry's acting right now. Terry isn't throwing a fit. Terry didn't throw a fit last year when it wasn't going his way. And by the way, he did stuff last year that I wasn't a fan of. I hated the gimmick of coming out after practice every day to sign fans or sign autographs for fans and them chant, "Terry, Terry, Terry," as Adam Peters walked off the practice field. I hated some of that stuff. Major distraction for the football team. Hated it. But at the same point, that's a lot better than driving 100 by the stadium and flipping the bird and getting an arrest warrant put out for your name. So I don't love everything that Brandon Ayuk is doing. I'm not a fan of most of it. But I can understand, too, that the Niners did kind of screw him in a lot of ways. They also paid him, though. That's the thing. So there's give and take on every part of this. Because you can look at it and say, yeah, they would do some of the things and it'd be a little contentious. And bringing it back to Terry real quick, Terry even mentioned in his press conference at OTAs last week that it's not something that he's forgotten, but he's looking at it in a different way than adversity is always a negative. He's looking at it as a way that something that he can learn from, something that he can build on going forward. And that's the right way to handle things. But Terry's also telling you that he doesn't forget it. It's not something that he completely moved on from. He can view it a little bit differently, but it's still something that he thinks about. And so for Ayuk, a guy that clearly can't handle it as well as what Terry McLaurin can, you end up in a spot where he starts acting out in really stupid manners. And I don't know that it's the best move for Washington to bring him in. I wouldn't do it, especially when Stephon Diggs is out there. If you're going to get someone with a red flag for hopefully a little bit cheaper, I'd rather have a guy that was productive last season and by all accounts was a great guy in the locker room, from beat writers to former players, other teammates of his. I'd rather have that guy than Brandon Ayuk. But real quick, back to the Niners thing. There's give and take on that side. The one side is, yeah, maybe they were difficult to negotiate with, and that really frustrated you, and you didn't feel like you got your worth. And then they started screwing with your money, with the guarantees and that sort of stuff. I can't dive into all of that stuff. I don't fully understand all that contract stuff. But there is the flip side, too. They gave you a contract, bud. They gave you what you were asking for. Maybe not the full degree, to the full extent, but they gave you what you were asking for. And by the way, this is a situation where people are, why are the Niners being petty? Well, Ayuk is being petty, and so the Niners are being petty back, which is well within their right. This goes back to the same thing that I was talking about earlier. Both sides of this, aside from some of the ridiculousness by Iuka, the speeding, both of these sides are well within their right to do what they're doing. Brandon Aiyuk can act a fool on Instagram. Brandon Aiyuk can do some of this ridiculous stuff to try to make it so that they want to release him sooner rather than later. The Niners can also sit on their hands and do absolutely nothing. And that's what they're doing. Because they're essentially just looking at each other, screaming across the room, saying, screw you. He's saying, screw you. And they're just yelling back and forth at each other until finally someone's going to have to budge. But for the time being, San Francisco also doesn't have to do anything. So I think that's the interesting part about this is there's give and take where it's not like the Niners are faultless. At the same point, they also cut you a check. And so both sides are at fault, and at the same time, both sides are well within their right to act the way that they're acting. So that's the interesting part about this whole situation. It's just something that if I were Washington, I wouldn't want any part of. How interested would you be in Brandon Aiyuk? 800-636-1067. And how much do you put blame on the Niners for this whole saga and the way that it's gone down? 800-636-1067. Toby Altizer with you here on Overtime on the Fan.
I just like this song better, Toby. It's more my vibe right now.
I was going to say, we're repeating songs here? Come on. Overtime, 106.7, The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until Nationals baseball tonight. First pitch, 9:45. Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave, 9:15, out in Oracle Park in San Francisco. By the way, if you ever get a chance to go to San Francisco, I know some people like the city, some people don't. Regardless, whatever. Oracle Park is fantastic. Near the top of my list, if not at the top of my list.
I'd say it's top five for me.
Yeah, if you get a chance to go, go. I mean, it kind of depends upon how you want to do your criteria of best ballparks, whether it's, you know, the history and something like Wrigley or Fenway or whatever it is. But the sight lines at Oracle, can't beat it. 800-636-1067. Speaking of San Francisco, Brandon Aiyuk, how much blame do you put on the 49ers for this whole saga? And are you still interested in him? 800-636-1067. Alex is in Silver Spring. Alex, what's going on?
What's going on, Toby? What's going on, guys?
What's up, man?
I'd say 85% 49ers, and there's a lot of stuff is coming out to the light now. So basically, a lot of players, they just, you know, come do what they have to do, and then just won't be left alone. Like we had Clinton Portis, you know, he wasn't going to kiss no tail. He just was going to come in here and do what he had to do, and that's it. And that's how some players are. A lot of stuff is coming to the light now. I mean, heard earlier, I can't remember who it was, talking about Kinlaw's situation. And you see how Kinlaw is working out so far up here. One, we need a wide receiver. So a lot of stuff, and it comes with, I know he has all this, whatever baggage or whatever it is, supposedly, but that's just frustration. I mean, put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
What if you were working for somebody and you weren't happy? We could easily quit. He can't. And, you know, and then this is just like kicking a dead horse. It's not going to get up.
Yeah.
So what's that tell you? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, the tough part, appreciate the phone call, Alex, because the tough part, again, is trying to relate sports sometimes to our everyday lives. It's similar in some cases and then sometimes so diametrically different. In this situation, sure, he can't quit his job. Chances are you're not getting paid $40 million of guaranteed money at your job either, you know? And there's a difficult part of that. You also choose the profession you're in and those sorts of things. And he chose to be a football player. You understand how that all works. And if he didn't want to sign a contract with the 49ers, he didn't have to sign a contract with the 49ers. That's the beautiful part about free agency with any sport. You don't have to sign anything. You might be in a better spot to stay with the team you're at. You don't have to sign anything. You know, in the NBA, they've at least made it so that with the salary cap and those sorts of things, I don't understand all the NBA salary cap, but they've made it so that teams can retain their stars by allowing them to play them supermax contracts that literally no one else can pay them. So in that essence, they have a benefit to being able to sign with the team that they're currently on. at the same point, they don't have to sign that contract. They don't have to stay there. They can go wherever they'd like to go. And that's the beauty of free agency. So Aiyuk never had to sign that contract. Yes, there were frustrations with the negotiations and all those sorts of things, but you also did sign the contract to stay with San Francisco, to sign the extension, to get that money. So it is one of those things where, yeah, there probably are some things that the Niners did that are not good. In the negotiation tactics, maybe some of the things that were said behind closed doors. I get all those things. That's fine. At the same point, the Niners are signing you to pay you an awful lot of money to be a part of their football team. But this goes back to some of the way that some organizations conduct business while others don't conduct business the same way. Some will conduct business in a way that is much more personal, much more working with the players, understanding that they're people. And there are some organizations, not just in the NFL, but in all sports, there are some organizations that are going to treat it the same way you and I do with a video game or a fantasy football team. And it's a little more cutthroat. And it's, hey, man, I don't really care about you personally. You don't give a whole lot to me other than what you do on the football field. And that's all that matters. So there are some that are going to be that way. And it's only about the checkbook. And it doesn't really matter what your personal feelings are. I don't care. I have to save money here and those sorts of things. So I would say that the Niners are on the more cutthroat side. The Niners are also in a situation, too, where they've had a lot of good players go through there in the last decade. And so part of it is you have to play a little hardball sometimes because while you might want an organization that is more generous to all the players that you want to keep, what happens when, okay, well, I overpaid a little bit here and then I had to overpay a little bit here and then I was being generous to this guy and all of a sudden, yeah, I can't afford this guy anymore, so bye-bye Christian McCaffrey. Or, yeah, I can't afford that guy anymore, so you know what? We can't keep Brock Purdy. We got to go find another quarterback. So that's the tough part about this business, is everything's a balance of balancing that relationship and understanding how to treat your players while at the same point making sure that you can still operate and make things work for your side of things. And I think what happened here is the Niners didn't value the relationship part of it as much with Brandon Aiyuk. And that's well within their right. Again, you're able to do that. There are consequences, and you're seeing some of them now, but you are able to negotiate in a harder way and say, hey, we're not going to that number. We'll pay you this, and you're still getting paid. It's not like you're not getting paid anything. You're still getting a handsome amount of money, a pretty penny. But on the flip side, you end up with negotiations that can be hard and hurt relationships. And some players value those relationships more than others. Maybe Brandon Aiyuk is someone that really cared about the relationships he had in the building and really cares about the way that he is viewed by John Lynch and company. And things didn't go well and soured, and so now he doesn't want to be there anymore. That's the tough part about all of this. So I don't think I could do what the last caller said and say 85% on the Niners. I would still tend to say that more is on Aiyuk's side than on the Niners' side. But at the same point, I don't think the Niners are blameless in all of this either. I don't think this is a shocker to see that this is playing out the way that it is with San Francisco of all teams. Not to say that it never happens with other teams, but to see this whole saga play out with the Niners as the team doesn't shock me in the slightest. 800-636-1067 if you'd like to hop in. Getting about a half hour away from tip-off and seeing some of the dignitaries at the game for Game 3, some of the celebrities getting ready for courtside action. Robert Kraft just on the TV. Jimmy Johnson, obviously Ben Stiller, Timothy Chalamet, Kylie Jenner. So many celebrities in attendance for Game 3 at the Garden. What do we want to see tonight? What do we expect to see tonight? We'll talk about that next here on The Fan.